Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are. It is Friday on the front porch on the horn. It's a minute past the hour. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room, which is already getting a merry compliment. You can for free by simply picking out a screen name and a password and not being a right-wing piece of crap. Jump into the merriment. Jump into the real-time madcap extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the hours during which this program is live, to wit, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday. Yes, indeed. Good evening to Devin and Earther, Jugapunch, Laborman, Little Gray, Sentient Being, all capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who being a third-stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. Longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Lottie will most likely be along shortly as well. Yes, and it's a kind of a rainy Friday on the front porch here. You don't, and there's some thunder booming around outside. So I simply want to offer a wee bit of a caveat that insofar as the technology behind the internets here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, stand involves a lot of dented tomato cans and a lot of string. If things go sideways, it will not be because I willed it so. It will be because we have a hopeless and crumbling infrastructure here. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes, yes, I am. And I want to welcome you all to this, as it turns out, the final week of broadcasting, the end of the final week of broadcasting of the month of April, what with me being gone next week. Last chance to get your conversation in for a few days. Yes. It's been a tiring weekend. We've got a member of our extended family having some health issues, and that has necessitated a whole lot of logistical fun and games. This is my little refuge. It was inescapable that I'd be absent from the air on Wednesday. But I tell you what, it's wonderful because when 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time rolls around, I get to pretty much put everything aside and make the world go away for our little conversation. And by the way, happy birthday greetings going out, very special happy birthday greetings going out today to the one, the only, Agnes, my beloved bride, my spouse, my traveling companion on the road of life. Today is Agnes's birthday. And I don't think she would mind if I went ahead and said, I mean, it's not like I'm, you know, cradle robbed or anything. So, and Agnes is not one of those women who gets all touchy about tetchy, as we say here in the hills and hollers, who gets all tetchy about her age. This is a big deal for Agnes. Today is Agnes's 50th birthday. Yes. And so, happy birthday, dearest. Happy birthday indeed. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, saying, happy birthday, Viking warrior princess. Go forth and conquer. Yes, yes, indeed. it will, I mean, it depends on who she's cut. Yeah, just don't cross her, for God's sakes. I mean, it's like that time when the bumbling police officer pulled her over many years ago, and the children looked up from the back seat and said, don't shoot her unless you got a silver bullet, officer. You'll only make her mad. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a sentient being in the chat room saying, yeah, she's just a kid. And she is. She is. Thanks, everybody in the chat room, for the happy birthday wishes. I will convey them to her. Now, of course, it goes, well, I kind of have to say this at the beginning of every program. This is a listener-supported broadcast effort. We are funded solely by your desire to keep independent broadcasting going. And so we have been trying to double up fundraising this week. And toward the end of the program last night, I got a lovely note from our buddy Harold, the chairman, the CEO and chairman of the Happy Trails, the Happy Trails Roundup Society, the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, who said he was going to take care of this evening. So a challenge is on the table to meet Harold's challenge. And that begins with a note that I got from Rick, Billable Rick, a little bit ago. Billable Rick said, I'd like to make a Purple Rain money check challenge of $50 in honor of the inimitable and late great Prince. Because I just refinanced my debts, I now have some extra wealth to share, and I can't think of a better cause than the horn. I'll contribute $50 and we'll double that amount, for a total of $100 for the first $50 raised on today's program. So there it is. There's 50 on the table. If that gets met, Rick kicks another 50 into it. And we will be quite a ways toward matching Chairman and CEO Harold's secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society offering. Thank you very kindly. Darlene in Connecticut says, happy birthday. Welcome to the 50s. Happy birthday, Agnes. Be prepared for all those annoying AARP subscription notices in the mail now. You mean we don't just want to jump right out there and sign up? I mean, I thought it got you like a free cup of coffee at McDonald's or something. McDonald's. Remember back when watching Mel Gibson movies was fun before we knew what a jackass he was? And there was that wonderful, wonderful line as uttered by Joe Pesci in one of those, oh, what was it? I can't even remember the name of the movies, but at one point Joe Pesci says, they forget the drive-thru. They forget the drive-thru. It's true. It is absolutely true. I was I ran off on a mission last night to get sort of a late night snack for the babies, and there it was. Yeah, that was it. Thank you, Marty. The Lethal Weapon series. I can always count on Marty for this kind of stuff. Yeah. What was I doing at McDonald's? Well, for some reason, children like McDonald's. B, yes, I know about the McNuggets, but still. It was two cheeseburgers plain and one cheeseburger as usual. Well, it was three cheeseburgers as usual. And we were down an order of McNuggets. And I stood there looking at this young fella scratching at an open sore just below his lip, and I knew things were not going to go well with my to-go order. I mean, that really puts the open sore on the kid's lip really put the happy in Happy Meal last night. Well, I just ruined dinner. Sorry, Scott. Sorry, Linda. yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I think you're right, Gerald. Gerald says Joe Pesci was talking about Subway in the movie. I think it was Lethal Weapon 2. But no, it's a general truism. Now, I mean, I haven't gotten out west to places like Bob's Burgers in Albuquerque, where they put green chili sauce on the burgers, and oh my God, wouldn't I love one of those? Or Jack in the Box, or whatever that happening burger joint is out there that I will never, ever, ever probably get to try. But still, generally speaking, at the drive-thru, they just do. Thank you very kindly to Louie. The first half of Rick's Purple Rain challenge has been met. So happy, happy, happy that is. Thank you very kindly. And listen, I don't know if fallout is the right word, but the repercussions from the sudden death of Prince continue to be felt. Oi, 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 oi. And what is it about someone's death that just brings out the unmitigated jackass in right wingers? You know, yesterday we started the program with Stacey Dash over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda de-blackenizing Prince. It continued today with Sheriff Joe Arpaio in Arizona declaring that Prince had died of a drug overdose. I haven't seen anything along those lines. And then, well, this. I mean, this is... Do you suppose anybody over there at NBC, the suits, you know, ever actually get up and watch Squint and the Meat Puppet in the morning, Joe Scar? Do they actually know what they're putting on the air? Now, I remember a long time ago when I was just a little baby pimply-faced gospel DJ, and early on, I wondered if every time I stumbled over a word, that great big bear-like giant of a man who owned the station was listening and was going to can me immediately. Hey, I was sort of... there's probably a psychological term for that. No, not paranoia. But I was, I suppose, self-motivating to make sure that I got all my newscasts right and pronounced all my words correctly. Because I figured they were listening. There it was, 11 o'clock at night. it was a motivator. But moments like what you're about to hear, I wonder if anybody, any of the suits upstairs at NBC, ever actually watch what goes out over the air and passes for professional broadcasting in their morning drive slot, the single most valuable piece of real estate in the first 12 hours of any given brand new day? Because I really don't think so. Otherwise, this guy wouldn't have a job. So, Squint was trying to prove his hipness and was in conversation with Wee Willie Geist. And I guess this is going to be the first hockey puck warning at 6:15 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time of this Friday on the front porch. No, Gerald, we're not quite to Chai Chai Rodriguez yet, but congratulations on that proud pig, Les. It's the Silver Sow, Johnny. Of course it is. Right, you are, Les. So just, you know, put the hockey puck in. I don't know if you need the full duct tape commitment, but I wouldn't do this without a hockey puck. And we run the audio up. And we strap in. And here we go. He said, here we go.
To Prince a lot more this morning. Donald Trump took his campaign to Pennsylvania state capitol yesterday, where he's making a strong push ahead of Tuesday's primary, spending $2 million on TV advertising with a new straight-to-camera commercial.
We'll cut taxes for the middle class, negotiate new trade deals, bring back jobs, save Social Security and Medicare without cuts, end illegal immigration, build the wall, strengthen our military, knock out ISIS, and take care of our great veterans.
Wait, there's more.
Yeah, exactly. Two of the seven U.S. House members who publicly endorsed Trump are from Pennsylvania. Congressman Tom Marino and Lou Barletta are helping Trump navigate the Keystone State, where voters will directly elect 54 uncommitted delegates. Trump spoke yesterday in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, where he started the event by announcing himself.
Hey, one thing real quick. He says we'll take care of our great veterans. What are we going to do with our not so great veterans? I mean, what do we do? What do we do with the private piles? Really? What do we do with the Beetle Baileys? Because Trump's only going to take care of the great veterans. I couldn't agree more, Carol Baker. Squint and the meat puppet make the Fourth Estate look like a condemned outhouse. With the, you know, with the walls gone, which at that point in time renders it pretty much just an open cesspit.
Jesus.
Here you go. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Donald Trump. How are you? So I am supposed to wait a half an hour because there are thousands of people outside trying to get in, but I can't do that to you, so we're going to come on right now. I've never introduced myself.
Now, here's what's funny. I guess this was just a cutaway to a T-Rump thing. And remember, they've said, we'll have more to say about Prince later. I understand the prioritization. I get that. Gerald says, well, goddamn, there you have it, Bob. Why the hell are we even having an election? This Trump guy has all the answers. Fuck it, let's just crown him king of the USA. No, wrong candidate. The anointed booger-eating future king of the United States is, the Lord Crucifer, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz. I know it's tough, Gerald, but you got to keep the candidate straight. And by the way, I can't wait, make you wait stuff, and I've never introduced myself. Okay. But what's funny is that he's speaking to a mostly empty arena. Now, if that was a Bernie Sanders rally, it would be bulging at the walls and rafters. So it goes on like this for a while.
But they didn't quite say it right the first time. I've won 23, 24 states. I'm getting spoiled. I got to win Pennsylvania. That's what I'm a person. And instead of 10,000 people, I'll have about 150 people.
And yada, say, yada.
Boy.
Ronald Reagan, what they said about Ronald Reagan about this time. He was an outsider. He didn't know the issues. He, Europe would never work with him. His negatives were very high. He had a gender gap. That's what they said about Ronald Reagan. And Trump's negatives are negatives that deal with his personality. People don't know yet what to make of him. Some of the stump speeches he's given, some of the style he has, some of the ways in which he's presented the issues. But it's his personality that people have trouble with. Fixing personality negatives is a lot easier than fixing character negatives. You can't change somebody's character, but you can change the way a person presents himself. Trump is an outsider.
Okay, that's nice. You can't change a person's character, but you can change the way a person presents themselves. So, in essence, this particular clown, this congressman from Pennsylvania, is confessing that Donald Trump, whom he professes to support, that they're just going to sort of nakedly fake up some sort of likable person instead of the weird, privileged freak who's running for office. Got it? So now it's time to cut back to the cutting edge. That was Paul Manafort, the new Trump campaign strategist, by the way, admitting that his boss is pretty much a piece of crap. So now we've got to cut back to the news desk there at Squint and the Meat Puppet.
He's projecting an image that's for that purpose.
In the car, that was Paul Manafort,
yeah, Paul Manafort
to RNC.
And it's interesting, Willie, he was talking about 1980. And actually, you know, our producers knew that, so they actually got a picture of Paul from 1980.
It was his high school photo.
Very nice. Yeah. High school photo. Very nice touch, guys, 1980. So what do you think, Nicole, about what's unfolding? They're doing the charm offensive at the RNC. Paul Manafort talking about, hey, a lot of this is for show. And truth be known, Trump kind of said that himself. I'm going to be tough for a little bit longer.
I have these moments where I think, so say he wins and he's president for 4 years. I can see him like on the helicopter coming home saying, I'll be presidential in the after presidency. Yeah, and he'll exactly. come in the post presidency when I make my library on Fifth Avenue. I actually don't think we'll ever arrive at a point where he is.
What is she giggling at?
Because there's always a fight. And the truth about the modern American presidency is you're always at odds and advocate. I mean, that's the point. You're, you know, leader of the free world. The whole idea of it is that you fight the fights that you have to fight to you know, advance American interests. So this sort of fantasy keeps moving the arrival date of when right. he will become presidential. But in the meantime, I think he is successfully exceeding the very low bar he set for himself. I think that by simply ceasing to attack Megyn Kelly on Twitter, he's got all of us talking about this pivot he's made, because he has. The truth is he has adjusted and recalibrated. But
he stopped, and we said it on the air. A lot of things when he was having the horrible time, we said it on the air.
She sounds like the things that somebody with a hangover says.
They ask you to do. You don't have to do it. Don't answer every question that they ask.
Right.
Put out statements instead of going out saying.
Let your surrogate speak for you. He's got Paul Manafort speaking for him.
Have other people speak for you if you have to. I mean, we actually said it on the air. One thing after another after another, and he's done everything
that you just mentioned.
How
brilliant. He has set it up that the bar, you just basically said he's acting presidential because he's not calling into shows, he's letting people speak for, I mean, just bait, no, nothing, he's not giving any incredible policy speech. So the great thing that he has set up for himself, and I actually think, I'm going to say this out loud, I actually think this guy's going to win. I know that.
You think he can
beat Hillary? I think he can beat Hillary.
Do you really?
I really, really do.
Tell me why you think that.
Well, I'll tell you, obviously, the woman problem, the Hispanic problem, the demographics are very against him. Having said that, though, Trump voters, we all know right now, are so sticky. They're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Everybody who's voting for Hillary, well, I guess Hillary. Number two, he can go to the left and right of Hillary. He can pretty much put portfolio of issues together that he's behind.
Because he doesn't really care that much about it. I mean, it doesn't. He's so nimble.
And to this last point.
I'll give you a last point in a second, but just on this other point where you said he's so flexible. He's like Prince, a shapeshifter. New York Times, top left, election 2016. Trump's views on gay issues set him apart on the GOP. I mean, Trump on social issues, on Planned Parenthood, when he was in the middle of the fight in South Carolina.
Okay. Can we stop this? Yes, we're stopping this now. You heard it. You heard it with me, so I know that this isn't one of those ugly little brown acid flashback moments. He's like Prince, a shapeshifter. Prince was a shapeshifter? Does Joe Scarborough even know who Prince was? And I'm still sad to be using the past tense. But really, does he? A shapeshifter? Oh, you know, these goddamn Republicans get into it every time they try to be hip. Yeah, and by the way, like I said, Joe Arpaio just had to be an asshat about Prince passing away. T-Bog over at Raw Story pointed this out. He tweeted, "Condolences to family of Prince, who allegedly died of overdose. Just celebrated 20 years of drug rehab in my jails. Drugs destroying our nation." As a longtime practitioner of the art of word knowing, can we take that apart for a minute? Condolences to family of Prince who allegedly died of overdose. There is no punctuation whatsoever in there. So, did Prince die of an overdose? Did Prince's family die of an overdose? It's really not clear. And then he says, just celebrated 20 years of drug rehab in my jails. Well, good for you, Joe. That 20 years clean is a good thing for you. What were you on when you quit? But then, of course, he immediately, or once people began giving him monstrous amounts of grief, he deleted the tweet. Because, you know, he's bold and heroic. And he says Prince died of, you know, an overdose. Because I guess in Joe Arpaio's world, all of those people playing that Rocky Roll music, they're all on the drugs. Well, at least initial reports from the investigators who found and identified Prince's body say that there was no sign of trauma or any indication of suicide. There were no obvious signs of trauma on the body, Carver County Sheriff Jim Olson said in a news conference. We have no reason to believe at this point that this was a suicide. The rest is under investigation. The statement went on to say, as part of a complete exam, relevant information regarding Mr. Nelson's medical and social history will be gathered. Anything which could be relevant to the investigation will be taken into consideration. Gathering the results will take several days, and the results of a full toxicology scan could likely take weeks. So, in other words, Joe Arpaio was just being a You take it, Mr. Spicoli.
You dick!
There we go. Because that's what he does best. Little update from earlier. Remember the screeching, shrill, screaming, racist, bigoted white lady from Wake Forest Baptist Medical Center? Remember her? Remember this? In a minute.
Lady, what is wrong with you? We need some help. It's something wrong with this volunteer. She's in here acting a fool. She's already called me a nigger. And she's pushing your stuff out the door. Well, lady, what are you doing?
You're getting out.
You're getting out. You're going all over the internet. We ain't did nothing wrong to you.
Peacefully having a conversation while the kids were playing. I don't understand.
Shut your mouth up. I don't want to put up with you. I don't care what you
what's
say.
What's wrong with you?
Lady, what is wrong
with you? Shut up. What's wrong with you?
What is wrong with you, lady?
What's wrong with me?
I got a camera. They're going to see how you're acting.
I'm scared
because you're yelling at us.
You come up here and take these people out of here.
Oh my
are you on your medicine, man?
I'm not putting up with it.
What is wrong with you, lady?
You just worry about your camera.
Don't get help.
You just called the Jesus.
Don't put your hands on me. Get out of my face, lady.
Get out of mine. Get out of mine.
Don't put your hands.
That's my son.
Don't put your hands.
Yeah, so you remember that. Jesus, she sounds like a character from Mortal Kombat. Get out of here. Well, we know a little bit more about her now. That is 68-year-old Donna Lorraine Bridger. She has since been served with a summons to appear in court on May the 3rd to face charges of what is called simple criminal assault or misdemeanor assault. If North Carolina is anywhere near the oldie common law definition of simple assault, it means that she put the individual you hear and the other people there in immediate apprehension of receiving an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature. Well, actually, she did go ahead and touch the people in an insulting and provoking manner. But even though there was video evidence, apparently her whiteness overcame the actual physical evidence of the touching, and so she's only being charged with assault instead of misdemeanor battery. Assault becomes battery when the touching takes place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that whole thing went down back... about 8 days ago on the 14th day of April. The hospital has continued to apologize and, she's gonna, you know, just face a... She's gonna face an assault charge, and if it's anything like... never mind, it's not worth the comparison. But I share that with you because, you know, we like to follow up on these great moments in great moments in white privilege. Mm-hmm. Oh, Friday on the front porch. You know, we clear out a lot of just a lot of stuff from the week. Ron and Raleigh with a truly an incisive question. Tell me, Bob, Ron writes, are most white folks unable to tell an asshole when they see one? I'm at pains to speak for most white folks, Ron. But at least with a certain portion of the white population, the problem arises because they... if you get a break if you're white, and you really have to work hard to prove your assholishness Whereas, well, I mean, the lady, I see your gray underwear. Get out! Yeah. Okay, a little help coming in from Michael in Sebastopol in regard to that phrase, shapeshifter. Michael says they liked shapeshifting, gender bending, and chameleon. And they used that stuff after Bowie's death too. Dusted off again, easy, cool. Ay ay ay. Meanwhile, out there in Merca, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, is doing his best to try to take a bite out of T. Rump's lead, and he's found the way to Republican hearts. He thinks, and apparently, this here is, you know, it. Working. Yeah, okay, so maybe, oh, wait, are we going to get it? It's so Friday. Nope, we're going to give up on it on that channel. And we'll try the other one instead. Because we can do that. Did you ever, I mean, just out of curiosity, does the word nimble come to mind for you? When you hear the name Donald Trump, because it doesn't, no. Well, dang it, where'd it go? There it is. Now, Ted Cruz knows what matters in America. This is what matters in America. Should a grown man pretending to be a woman, do you hear the ominous synth music, be allowed to use the restroom, the same restroom used by your daughter,
people,
your wife?
People, they use the bathroom that they feel is appropriate.
Donald Trump thinks so. It's not appropriate. It's not safe. It's PC nonsense, this destroying America. Donald Trump won't take on the PC police. He's one of them. Well then. Okay. Them? One of them? Are the people running Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger-eating future king of America's campaign? Have they've apparently, I mean, if you listen to the ominous music and it's all in black and white and everything, so you know it's scary, because, you know, Psycho was done in black and white, and Norman, right? I think they've confused trans people with zombies. Oh, now zombie trans people, there's something we could worry about. Brains and potties. So it's just gonna keep getting funnerer and funnerer and, you know, funnerer. God, there's so much stuff we didn't get to this week. It's let's see, what else? I bet this wasn't on Morning Joe this morning. I bet it wasn't on Chicken Noodle News or CNN or Fox or anything, but you remember the story last night about the numbers of flood events they're going to have in South Florida by 2045. It turns out to be more flood events than there are actually days in a year. They're going to have more floods per year in South Florida by 2045 than there are actually days in said year. There are going to be 380 flood events in South Florida, in Miami-Dade. There are going to be 380 flood events in 365 days. And this, of course, is because of, well, you know, that monstrous hoax called climate change. Yes. Well, just a little climate change news for you. A little more. Agence France-Presse reporting. The death toll from a powerful explosion at a petrochemical plant in Mexico climbed to 24 after authorities were able to enter the facility, state-run oil giant Pemex said. We have confirmed 24 deaths, up from the previous toll of 13 from Wednesday's blast, CEO Jose Antonio Gonzalez Anaya told a news conference, adding that the number of missing dropped from 18 to 8. Pemex, the article notes, co-owns the plant. Well, how nice. Not. I bet some real nasty stuff got into the air with that explosion. But, invest in some hip waders, South Florida, because we ain't doing squat about climate change. Because we don't understand that it's not something we can do something about in 50 years from now, but it's something we should have started on, well, a generation ago. Oopsie. So there's that. Note coming in from GK. Hey, Bob, I'll bet that when Fox News does the memorial of Ted Nugent, when, if we are lucky enough that he dies, it will be huge. We will be told that Ted died when he dove headlong into a burning car to rescue a Mexican family, along with the family dog, from impending doom. While all along, Ted was found on the pavement parking lot at a Mexican fast food place, sucking on the exhaust pipe of his big-ass Hummer. Be nice if you'd get busy. We have an inquiry coming in from Marty. Marty has an inquiry of my fellow California-based Horn listeners. Have any of you gotten a robo phone call from T-Rump telling you what to do to be able to vote for him? Yeah, that after that whole my own kids were too stupid to register to vote for me in New York thing, I imagine they are trying to get out front on that. Meanwhile, a little cultural history coming from Scott and Punky in San Diego. The first time I ever heard the term shapeshifter was about 12 years ago in one of David Icke's crazy books. I actually tried to finish it, but it was just, well, too crazy. The notion is that virtually everybody Icke doesn't agree with politically is a shape-shifting reptilian. As I recall his theory about it, reptilians are the result of the biological and reproductive intermingling of human beings and, of course, aliens. Of course. A horse is a horse, of course. But those are shape-shifting, chameleon. You know, those are all ways of saying, you know what? We think he might have been kind of gayish, but we don't have enough to get away with saying it here, so we'll say he was a shape-shifter. But he was a shape-shifter like Trump, so is... What are you saying there, Scar? Well, what I'm saying here is I want a cabinet position inside, the Trump administration. And let's remember, The Apprentice was on NBC, and I'm sure the honchos, the suits at NBC, would be tickled pink if, say, Joe Scarborough were to be T. Rump's running mate. I mean, it would be an NBC package deal, wouldn't it? Yeah, I didn't think about that angle, did you? Mm-mm. And speaking of Ted Cruz and his obsession with how people go potty. He's trying to catch up with T. Rump on the chucking people out of rallies up front. So Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger-eating future king of America, had a rally in Maryland. And a teenager and his mom reserved tickets for the event. 16-year-old James Van Killenberg wrote on his Facebook page that he and his mom were patiently sitting at the rally that was being held for, you know, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, et cetera, et cetera. Well, here's what he said. Before we even had a chance to see Cruz, I was tapped on the shoulder. When I turned, there was a campaign staff member asking me to leave. I am a visibly trans person, and I'm proud of it. So I wore my trans pride flag around my shoulders and a National Center for Transgender Equality shirt. Campaign staff member kept holding on to me. Wait, they touched him? They touched him? I'm pretty sure Maryland's not that far outside the mainstream. That would be battery, especially on a juvenile. The campaign staff member kept holding on to me, saying the event staff were asking me to leave. I then asked what the reason was, but he only repeated himself. Event staff are asking you to leave. When I asked for a reason again, he told us to follow him to the event staff. The staff that were following us grabbed me again and told me, "Ma'am, I need you to cooperate and not shout." I corrected him, telling him that I'm a boy, and he briefly apologized. When we met with event staff, they told us that because we were in a private event, they had grounds to tell us we were trespassing. We explained that we reserved tickets, and they then went on to explain that they had observed us taking part in an event outside. What it boiled down to is they'd seen young James Van Killenberg holding a sign that said, "Human rights are not up for debate," and up with this, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger-eating future king of America, will not put. Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz will not tolerate anybody who thinks that human rights are not up for debate. He then says, "We were then pushed out of the venue. When trying to explain what had happened to the Cruz volunteers outside, they laughed at us. The level of disrespect and aggression there was outstanding." Meanwhile, Rafaelito was out there speaking to the faithful, saying, "Have we gone stark raving nuts?" Asked and answered, Your Honor. Asked and answered. Damn. I mean, honestly. It goes on and on and on and on. Oh, and speaking of the right-wing repig-licking obsession with where and how people go potty, and I still have problems with myself when I say that. I mean, because they are right-wingers, repig-lickens, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, booger-eaters, members of the toenail-clipping toothpick society, actually sit around pondering people going potty. Now, is that an aspect of coprophilia? Yeah, I'm asking for a friend. Ay, ay, ay. Mm-hmm. But they do, and it blows my mind. And you know what? They're getting pissed off at all these politically correct corporations that they've lured to come to their state so that they could give them away the commons, you know, the tax base of the state, in order to bring jobs, you know, those jobs in the South that pay substandard wages and don't have benefits worth a damn. Yeah. Well, they're getting kind of upset. Especially when, like, PayPal in North Carolina said, you know, we were going to come here and bring 400 jobs, but now we're not going to do that. We're going to go somewhere that's not all obsessed with where people go potty. Enter Tennessee House of Representatives Majority Leader Gerald McCormick. Gerald McCormick, re-pig licking, of course, has him an idea. He thinks, and we use the term loosely, that if a corporation, and remember, not just a corporation, but, you know, a corporation.
Corporations are people, my friend. Of course they are. Human beings, my friend.
Right. If a corporate person, say, in Tennistan, opposes, say, Tennistan trying to have their own potty bill, then Tennessee House of Representing Majority Leader, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Gerald McCormick, well, he wants to be able to raise the taxes. And I'm sure, now, damn it, I am sure he has signed Grover Norquist's tax pledge. They all have to, you know. And they said, all these companies who tried to blackmail us over this thing, when they come for their corporate welfare checks, next year we need to have a list out and keep an eye on it. go ahead, Gerald. Do bite the hand that feeds you. Maybe you can convince them that they all need to leave Tennistan. And I'll save the referral to Mr. Spicoli. Right. So take that, you potty going PC police. They got your number in Tennistan. And they may even ban you from Dollywood and Pigeon Forge, damn it. Oh, and I referenced this during the earlier part of the week, but I never got around to any of the particulars. This is delightful. You know, Harriet Tubman is going to replace Andrew Jackson on the $20 bill. And it's about damn time. I mean, Jackson was a homicidal maniac. And so it was that I got a big giggle when Sandra sent me a link the other day of one of these right-wing economic goober freak paranoid types positively fulminating, I tell you, fulminating over the whole Jackson $20 bill thing. This is a goober by the name of Mac Slavo. Oh, email here. Jim doesn't like my use of the phrase go potty. Jim says, "Am certain referenced folks have been potty trained. Why not use the term relieve themselves instead of other euphemisms?" Well, because using the phrase go potty, Jim, highlights the ridiculousness, the stupidity, the manifest ignorance and foolhardiness of these right-wing friends of Jesus. And it also points out kind of the Freudian flavor to it all, being constantly obsessed with the with bodily eliminations, and the fact that that's the kind of thing that, you know, there's a phase, if you've ever had kids, there's a phase that toddlers go through when they, you know, that came out of me. So that's why we use the phrase go potty instead of the more, I guess, stentorian relieve themselves. That's why. But anyway, back to Mac Slavo having a hissy over Harriet Tubman. "The war on cash has many fronts." See, he's one of these paranoids who thinks that there's a one-world government coming that's going to make us all get like little plugs in our necks, and they'll just get your card readers, or maybe RFID chips being planted under our tongues or something. That he knows because he's had a message through the fillings in his teeth. He won't go through electric eye, you know, motion detector, electric door openers, because they make him howl like a spider monkey in heat. "The latest battle is for the face of the currency itself. And the central bankers who control the front anyway have imposed a symbolic defeat against the leaders in America's past who fought against the stranglehold of the money makers. Naturally, there are liberal politics at play, fighting for every inch of ground in the war for ideological re-engineering. History is being whitewashed." Goddess of irony, we praise thee. I shall sacrifice a rubber chicken at midnight. Yes. Placing an anti-slavery black woman on the $20 bill constitutes whitewashing history. "History is being whitewashed, and various figures of antiquity rolling in their graves. At stake is a dispute for the powers of government, even better than the more famous duel between Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton, of whom we also speak." Who, Mac Slavo? You and that mouse in your pocket? You're the Queen of England now? "The iconic $20 bill with the face of President Andrew Jackson and the $10 bill with the face of the nation's first Treasury Secretary Alexander Hamilton have long pitted two ideological extremes against each other as they pass along as some of the most used denominations in circulation." I'm not sure I like the way he uses the word "used" there. "But now, the money powers at the Treasury Department have decided that it is time to add a woman's face to the money supply as well." You can almost hear the sneering derision in the word "woman." "As such, the powers that be have decided to oust Andrew Jackson from the lineup, and with it, part of his legacy." We really can't oust his legacy relative to the Trail of Tears, because, you know, there were just a few too many thousand human beings that died in that for it to be ousted. "It will be removed in favor of a female representing the struggle for racial equality, while an early proposal to remove Alexander Hamilton's bill will be scrapped, though the proposal includes a redesign on the backs of his and several other notes." Really? On the backs of white people? How about that? "With scenes from the woman's suffrage movement, Susan B., and all
the gals. Dramatically, it seems there was a backlash to counter the coup against Hamilton, including support from former Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke. And there's a reason for Bernanke's bias toward Hamilton. It was Hamilton who, from the early days of the nation, clamored for a central bank and a strong interventionist federal government. Oh my God, when do we get to the Illuminati? Where's the Bohemian Grove? Where are the chemtrails? And then, of course, there's Twitter. There's Twitter, where end cultural Marxism at Genophilia on Twitter remarks, so as the USA becomes a third world shithole, the $20 bill goes ghetto. Meanwhile, original Bubs R.A. says, replace man who hated banks with commie slave stealer on cotton banknote, seven-layer dip of irony. And then, at Darky Enlight, I-L-M, oh no, just L-M, not Industrial Light Magic. At Darky Enlight, L-M, says, removing a white, I think we're going to need a different accent. Removing a white from $20 bill to replace with a mud skin is an act of, hashtag, war on whites. Wake up, white man. And then there's some blonde lady who says, Harriet Tubman on 20 is clearly a conspiracy to force cashless society, race aside. She ugly. Well, ma'am, a little history here. Back when Harriet Tubman was a little bitty slave girl, you know, because she was alive during the time when white folks thought that they could actually own people with skin darker than a colored, darker than a brown paper bag. Yes, you remember? Well, her master, her owner, was meaning to enforce, he was right wroth at the time, you understand. And at the time, he picked up a heavy metal object, and he meant to throw it at the other dark-skinned human being that he owned, and therefore had the right, seeing as that dark-skinned human being was just property, you know, chattel property. He was going to chuck that at that other dark-skinned human being, but he missed, and instead he whonked little slave girl Harriet Tubman right in the punkin head. And she suffered from it from the rest of her life and was never even compensated for the damages because that was all right, because she was a slave. But you know, the blonde lady says, race aside, she ugly. Meanwhile, another idiot says, Andrew Jackson was one of my favorite presidents. Why couldn't Harriet Tubman be on the 50 instead? Because you know who's on the 50. That's right. Ulysses S. Grant. Yankee. This. Harriet Tubman should have been on the $20 food stamp. Seriously, Harriet Tubman is so ugly it's painful to look at her. Of course, the Confederates 155, 60 years ago said the same. We're still saying the same thing. I mean, some things, same as it ever was. Same as it ever was. This is not my beautiful Jackson. This is not my beautiful Andrew.
And then a little reminder, when these bills come out, it's going to be a while, okay? But don't be surprised if you find yourself carrying $20 bills that have been made over into racist caricatures. We are not okay. Hey, good evening. Good evening, Rico. Welcome to the conversation this evening in the chat room. Damn. Just, you know, damn. Oh, Carol, you're going to burn in hell right next to me. Harriet Tubman? They thought it said Bernie Taupin, and they didn't want no Elton John collaborator on the bill. Harriet Tubman's history is worth reading. There was more courage in that woman's pinky than in most of the entire Confederate Army. She even upbraided Abraham Lincoln for his dilatory dilly-dallying in emancipating Southern slaves. Oh, there went Rico. Hope you come back. She even gunned up and led a raid, a Union raid, that wound up freeing, I believe, a bunch more victims of Southern human rights abuses. Strap in. Oh, my, of course. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, he's not the only one. Lamar Alexander, the plaid avenger of Tennistan, took particular umbrage at having Harriet Tubman replace the genocidal maniac on the front of the 20. He's still on the back of the bill. However, I guess if you're from Tennistan, you have to protect your home racist. Well, that's what happens when you've got home racist advantage. Remember, Andrew Jackson, as I noted earlier, previously, Andrew Jackson was known as a humane slave owner. That's why he put an ad in a Nashville newspaper offering a $100 reward for the return of a runaway slave and added that he would personally happily pay $10 per 100 lashes, up to 300 lashes laid on the back of said runaway slave by his captor. Yeah, you could pick up an extra $30 just for whipping the back of said slave 300 times. Yeah, by the way, 300 lashes with a whip, that come near killing a human being. In other words, he was soliciting murder. Steve in New York just says, I'm resigning as a white person. Adding, wait, these complaints are serious? Yes, they are serious, Steve. I mean, this kind of goes hand in hand with what we're going to face for the next 4 years if, in fact, Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton is elected president. You know how we've dealt with 8 years of racism right out of the closet? Right out from under the cesspool. Well, we're going to deal with it in its anti-woman form, if I think it's a long shot, if Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton is elected president. I bet you, you know what? I bet you the House of Representatives already has a bill of impeachment drafted and ready to roll. I bet you on the day after the inauguration, if she is actually elected president, which I still doubt, I mean, I just don't understand the numbers. I don't know how you can have somebody who is loathed by more than 50% of the country win an election where you have to have at least 50% of the 50% plus point. Electoral college and everything. Maybe that's how it happens. I don't know. But you know, we're gonna be dealing with an absolute shitstorm of misogyny if she is elected president. I mean, just steel yourself for it. If you think this campaign's nasty, if you finally kind of, you didn't get used to it, but you just sort of accepted that this is a viciously, virulently racist nation, and that's just the way they were going to treat Barack Obama, even though he was president of the United States. If you finally came to terms with that to the extent that one humanly can, possibly can, you're going to go through an entire new, disgusting process learning to cope with the misogyny that will be out there for President, Dr. First Lady, Senator, Secretary Clinton. And by the way, Ron notes, well, here we are. Don't you just love post-racial America? And by the way, Andrew Jackson was called Sharp Knife by the Cherokee people. Yeah. Yeah. So, I've filibustered long enough. Remember, we are trying to match up Harold's kind offer regarding this here Friday on the front porch. And that starts out with a challenge that's on the table courtesy of Billable Rick. And Billable Rick has said that he will match the first $50 that come in. 25 of that has come in courtesy of Louie. Thank you very kindly. And hopefully another 25 will come in, at which point Billable Rick says he's going to put another 50 on top of that. And maybe we can get it rolling for the evening. So it's time to fire up the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that is Friday on the front porch. You know how to join in, I trust, by now. If you're new, maybe you haven't. I mean, we're getting new listeners all the time over at podbean.com, podbean.com. That's one of the places where I put up the podcast in addition to its regular location. There's a Podbean app and all of that stuff if you want to go there. If you would like to participate in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that is the Horn Malloy Skype chat group on Friday on the Front Porch, just send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and say something in your message about Friday on the Front Porch, or join the conversation, or I'm a part of the Horn family, blah, 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 blah. Jump right in on that, and Sparky will then show you the breadcrumb trail. So a little break, and then we will come back with the one and only Friday on the Front Porch. This is Conversation Radio, independent, listener-supported style. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Big disease with a little name. By chance, his girlfriend came across a needle, and soon she did the same. At home, there are 17-year-old boys, and their idea of fun is being in a gang called the Disciples, high on crack, toting a machine gun. Church and kill everyone inside. You turn on the telly and every other story is telling you somebody died. My sister killed a baby because she couldn't afford to feed it. We're sending people to the moon. In September, my cousin tried reefer for the very first time. Now he's doing horse. It's June. Everybody see the dawn.
Sign of the Times, Prince, on this Friday on the front porch. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to Ron and Raleigh for providing that. All right, it's time. Let's go over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and check in with Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran Horn Malloy, Skype chat room moderator and guild and third stage guild navigator Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob, is this thing on?
Yes, it is. I know you're there. I can hear you breathing.
Oh, okay. All right, because you're kind of garbly every once in a while.
Oh, hell. I checked bandwidth on this connection, and it looked like it was awesome, but it's been in and out all day.
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably have to make another call to Texas. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You know, Texas. Where they are definitely having a call center.
Well, you kind of interrupt my bird watching out the door here.
What about? Damn! I'm sorry.
Give him the bird.
It's okay. Couple weird little blackbirds going at it because it rained about half an hour before the show, and then there's some boomers off to the northwest that might come in. So if it gets too bad, I might not be able to talk. If it hits the roof, I'm out.
Well, yeah, you kind of... And the thunderstorm seems to have passed here, but I understand completely.
Well, I'm not saying I'm going to be out. I'm just... You won't be able to hear me because the rain on the roof will be so loud, probably.
Oh, no, I think we experienced that like once, and it sounded like you were in a machine gun fight.
Yeah, okay. as long as you know what it is.
Well, I mean, I was kind of assuming it's not a machine gun fight, Sparky. I mean,
you can yell.
This is not
me.
Vietnam. Say, there, this is not Vietnam, Sparky. There are rules.
Yeah, well, but I fought my war with a toolbox, not a gun.
Right.
So anyway, Tim, do you still got to run off to go to the doctor?
No, my head's feeling better. Thank you.
What's the matter, Tim?
Oh.
I had a headache, tension headache.
Ugh.
But I'm feeling better.
Odd you would say that, because that's part of what we've been sort of dealing with over the past week. My son-in-law's having some problems. Oh. And it got bad enough that he went down to the, you know, the main hospital. And my God, the horror stories I've been told out of there. Based on his symptoms, they admitted him almost immediately. And
wow.
and then he sat in the ER for 36 hours. Waiting for a room to open up. The story. At one point, the law enforcement authorities came and had a fight with a woman who was pretty well not home and was tearing her clothes off, and the fight took place across the bed that my son-in-law was in. And,
is it one of those emergency rooms with just curtains?
I don't know. They were just so overflowing that they had him on a gurney sitting out in the hall. It's like freaking a rock around here. there was another guy sitting there who periodically would just start growling and hitting himself in the head. I mean, just wow.
Sounds like L.A.
Well, I mean, this state. I don't know. You know, maybe this is a topic. There are places in this country where, if you take a hard look at the infrastructure, this country's dying. Okay, I mean, it's coming apart. It's coming unglued. The ability of for-profit healthcare to deliver or for-profit health insurance system and our healthcare infrastructure to deliver the services that are needed by a deeply troubled population is getting perilous. I mean, I heard these stories. I'm like, geez, I wonder what emergency room the 1% go to. It's astonishing. Oh, hey, good news vis-a-vis Rick's challenge, and Harold's CEO of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society's kind offer. I am proud to announce that Brother Deacon Asa has responded to Rick's challenge and to Agnes's birthday, because he says this is for the Cabana Boy, with a generous contribution of $66.66. And Rico has just kicked in as well. So Rick, Billable Rick, your challenge is met. Maybe Billable Rick's not there.
He may not be at the mic.
Yeah, it might be another one of those client call moments.
No, he's home, but he left a message. He said he'd be back in 20 minutes at 4:18. So.
Okay. We'll tell him later.
Did you want to get a Canada perspective on an emergency room? Steve's in the room.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, that'd be cool. Hey, Steve.
Hi there. How you doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
Oh, not too bad.
So our Canadian, and you know, we'll just throw this open to the Canadian contingent too. Are Canadian ERs like war zones like they are down here?
Are Canadian ERs what?
Are Canadian emergency rooms like war zones like they are down here in the U.S.?
Certain times of the day they can be pretty busy, but sometimes they're not too bad.
And we had a story from an ER in Jackson, Mississippi earlier. I presume that you very seldom see stories in Canada about mommies who drop their purses and have their freedom protectors just go off and shoot their 2-year-old toddlers in the face, right?
Yeah, that's pretty rare up here. Probably rare to non-existent.
It's nice to know that there's civilization somewhere on this little planet. And there's Tracy. Good evening. Good evening, Miss Tracy.
Good evening, guys. How you doing?
I'm happy to be among good company. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, between listening to people saying that we shouldn't have Harriet Tubman on a $10 bill or $20 bill because I don't know, she's ugly. Why did all of a sudden I flashed to the color purple? And Shook Avery saying to Seeley, "You sure is ugly." And I don't think.
Well, you know, my response was, "Well, goddamn, you know, Benjamin Franklin was such a looker."
I know, he's such a handsome guy. The rationale, and you know, and you follow, you know, you followed. Well, Harriet Tubman followed the story about the crazy woman that went off on the brother and his girl and their kid in, you know, whatever, you know, southern, you know, extremist state that was, you know, because I think they all begin to blend together. I think they all just kind of all blend in together after a while, you know, because they're all just as, I don't know, stupid or just. And, you know, and I hate to say stupid because then I'm doing generalities and I'm lumping an entire state of folks in with, you know, other folks. But there has to come a point when people just like, enough already.
But Tracy, that doesn't happen in this country. There's no such thing as enough already. We don't have the collective will to tell the ignoranti to shut them up.
Okay, I know.
And that's a bitter pill to swallow. I realize. Hey, just. So, what's going on in Tracy's world this evening? Cake? I mean.
Yeah. In Seal Beach.
I noticed back the first time Tracy mentioned Seal Beach, you were like, well, it's 20 degrees cooler.
Yeah.
I mean, there was like a little envy in that, maybe?
It was 90 up here. It's like 70 some odd degrees at Seal Beach.
Oh, and by
the way,
last night when I made the Bowie reference and conjured Greg down in San Diego, I got a note. I just said Bowie. I heard your shout out to Greg in San Diego. I totally overthought what lyric you had in mind. Who knew this was so simple as Changes? Because, well, I mean, that came out of the blue to me yesterday. I was reading a screed by a hilarian talking about these naive, foolish young people who don't have the common sense to support Hillary. And that line from Changes just immediately popped into my mind. And these children who you spit on as they try to make their world are immune to your consultations. They're not aware what they're quite aware what they're going through.
Awesome. Never. Them Hillary folks, them Hillbots are angry people.
Well, they are. And see, they've been very, very privileged. I mean, this is a generation of people. This is the generation that came of age when we first started giving out participation trophies. I mean, I would know. I mean, I'm at the low end of that generation, according to some metrics. Although Devin told me last night that I'm really a Generation Xer. It's cool. I don't know how Generation X is going to. Maybe they'll have a lodge meeting and vote me in.
I'll vote you in. I'm an Xer.
Wait, you're what?
I was born in 66.
Yeah, well, you're definitely an Xer. You and Agnes were born in the same. You and Agnes were born in the same year. But I was told that I was told at one point that the baby boom ends in 1964. That it was from 1945 to 1964.
Correct.
Okay, so I'm a boomer.
The tail end of the boomers. Yeah. Way tail end.
Yeah. Just squeaked in.
Yeah, we're not privileged.
You
were the radical babies.
It's astonishing to behold the nastiness of some of these Hilarians. And you know something else? I started thinking about, because I was thinking because I keep seeing this, you know, surrender Dorothy stuff. You know, Bernie must get out of the race. Ah! And again, I keep remembering that Hillary. I guess it's a special Clinton rule. Hillary got to stay in the race until after the California primary. But you know, her people are, that commie's got to leave the race. He's destroying the party. He's dividing it. And so I remembered. I started thinking back, and it all just dawned on me. Just poof, you know, right there. I was thinking back to the May primary in 2008, when you know, Barack Obama already had it sewed up. So naturally, West Virginia, by at least one metric, the most racist state in the union, voted overwhelmingly for Hillary. And I will never forget. I mean, there were actual clips of microphones being put in the faces of cranky white old Democratic voters, asking them, you know, why did you vote for Hillary? I mean, Barack Obama's already got the nomination sewed up. And there was I just don't think America's ready for one of them in our White House. And by the way, my pastor said he's a Muslim. And there were oodles of those kinds of West Virginians.
We got to, we'll get you something to drink. And also,
that was spooky.
And so I got to thinking that the same people who were saying, you know, our country's not ready for one of them in the White House, is now saying our country's just not ready for one of them in the White House. Only the meaning of them changes from in 2008 being a black man to in 2008 meaning an FDR style democratic socialist.
How can they not be ready? It happened back in 1932.
Well, but you know, the Democratic Party has been changed into this, you know, this corporatist blob, where its entire existence is dependent upon you know, billionaires attending $300,000 a plate dinners. I mean, and I mentioned this because we were talking about Andrew Jackson. You know, no person is all bad or all good. Just like what is it? The Kinsey scale says nobody's all straight or all gay, or if they are, they're at the far end of a spectrum on either end. That there's a fluidity. That there's a. And so when you talk about Andrew Jackson, you know, you can also talk about a man who was the first president to call for an end to the Electoral College and the direct election of the president by virtue of a popular vote. And you can talk about a person who believed, I mean, within the parameters of his time, you know, white men believed in expanding the franchise so more people could vote. So, you know, that's on, I guess that's on the plus side of the old hickory scale. So, I mean, do you see where I'm going?
Yeah.
Yeah, not all bad, not all good, but, you know, this country, and that was the Democratic Party as it got invented. Because, the Republican Party of Jefferson's invention, I mean, let's remember, the first American to, the first president to advocate the right of states to secede or to nullify laws. You know, the nullification crisis was not invented by John C. Calhoun of treasonous South Carolina. Nullification was first advanced as a political theory by Thomas Jefferson, as was secession. He believed in the right of states to secede from the Union established by the Constitution.
But isn't that what the Tenth is about? Without secession?
Well, it was not something that was generally agreed upon. You know, the first great secession crisis in the United States was a secession crisis that was fomented in New England. New England wanted to secede from the new United States, but only if they could get New York to go with them.
What happened to Bob?
I'm right here.
Yep. Right there. He's right here. I think.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm here.
No lightning.
Wait, are you guys not
here?
Have I disappeared?
Did you see the email that I sent you?
Well, yeah, a little bit ago, yeah.
Bernie evoked the vice president in his speech.
Was that the you should play this?
Yeah, it's only 2 minutes and 55 seconds or something.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if that was a bumper or what. Okay, well let's give that a listen, shall we? If I can get it to play. It's been a bit of an issue. Here we go. I hope.
And let me begin by reading to you something very interesting. I just saw it a few minutes ago. It was an article in the New York Times this afternoon quoting a great son of Pennsylvania, Vice President Joe Biden. And this is what the article says. It says that Joe Biden remains neutral in the battle between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. Well, that's all right. Let's read the rest of the article here. But not between their campaign styles. He'll take Mr. Sanders' aspirational approach over Mrs. Clinton's caution any day. Quote, I like the idea of saying we can do much more because we can, Mr. Biden said in an interview. I quote, I don't think any Democrats ever won saying, quote, we can't think that big. We ought to really downsize here because it's not realistic, he said in a mocking tone. Come on, man. This is the Democratic Party. I'm not part of the party that says, well, we can't do it. End of quote. And I think the vice president, born in raised in Scranton, I think the vice president is exactly right. That is what this campaign is about. That's right. It is about having the courage to face the reality of American life today. Understand that that reality is not always a pleasant reality, but have the courage to take on the special interest who are preventing us from going forward.
Dadgum. It kind of makes you wonder if Joe Biden's been listening to the program. You guys there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Kind of broken up.
For a minute.
No, it makes you wonder if Joe Biden's been listening to the program, because that's what I've been saying all along. No, we can't is not an answer to America's future. Go figure. By the way, you may be getting a contact request, Sparky.
Okay. Amanda?
Yeah, Amanda. Okay, are we having transmission issues? I mean, it's unusual that we have these kind of...
I think it's just on your Skype, Bob.
Do we need to disconnect and reconnect?
Are we having transmission issues? I mean, it's unusual that we have these kind of...
Mandy, you need to mute.
Do we need to disconnect and reconnect?
I'm here.
It's unusual that we have these...
just a little learning curve. We'll get this figured out. Do we need to disconnect and reconnect then? I mean, I'm showing...
I don't think so. Now you're good.
Okay, that's just weird.
You're going out over the air.
Yeah, I'm over the air. It's just the back and forth on the Skype side is kind of weird. It's almost like it's not real time.
Okay, well, I'm busy trying to do something right now.
Yeah, I understand, and I'm testing bandwidth. Yeah, I'm showing. I got awesome bandwidth.
You're sounding good now.
Weird. Oh, by the way, from the food porn department, this evening repast in New York City via Steve is beer battered fish, shoestring French fries, barrel aged bourbon stout at the local bar. Let's all get down to the local bar. I love me some Friday fish fry. Thank you very kindly to the continuing to arrive happy birthday wishes for Agnes. I will share all of them with her. Thank you, Sylvia. Thank you very kindly.
Okay, let's see.
Jules, what's happening this evening?
Oh, not a lot. I'm just trying to relax and get through the weather. It's been rather rainy and kind of miserable the last few days. And RA doesn't like rainy, cold, nasty weather, so.
Well, let's see. I'm planning on traveling soon. So, hey, look, it's thunderstorms all week long, naturally.
Oh, yes, you'll love that, won't you?
Oh, it's going to be beautiful.
Yes, we're going to miss you next week a lot, Bob.
I'm gonna miss y'all too. I don't take time away idly, but this is a got to.
Yes, we know.
I got one moving in now.
Storm.
Yeah, it's been rolling. The moving bowling alley. Is coming my way.
Nice.
You lucky. It's 76 down here.
No, after a few days of 89 degree weather, I'll take the cool again because I know the hot's coming really soon.
We had 90s a couple days ago.
How are the reservoirs doing, Duncan?
I haven't checked on them lately. All I know
I heard is they're dumping water because there's too much water, so they have to let some out.
Well, I think Oroville might be full.
What about Shasta Dam?
I haven't checked into Shasta Dam.
Oh, by the way, did you guys hear there was a fresh leak down at Porter Ranch?
Hey.
In Aliso Canyon?
Again.
Yeah. But don't worry. It's not the same company screwing up some more. This is a different company screwing up.
But you notice how fast they repair it?
It took only, what, 3-4 months? 6-7?
Unlike what's happening in Watch, which has been like that for how many years?
And but how, I guess that's how far is it from Porter Ranch to Watts?
You know what? I don't know. But it's still within the city limits, though.
The latest bunch to have a gas leak there in Aliso Canyon is Crimson Resource Management, which sounds like a company out of a Monty Python skit. Wasn't that the Crimson Permanent Assurance? It's something we work very hard at avoiding, but things happen. It was a minor repair, a turn of a wrench, and it's done, according to Scott Buntman. Yeah, so that place is leaking all over. That's the third, counting the original disaster, that's the third leak.
Jeez.
Aren't they just inspiring?
Uh-huh. Oh, we're going to supposedly have brownouts and blackouts because of the gas leak. And they want to reactivate it again.
What, they got to shut down some of the gas-powered power plants?
Yeah.
Oh, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but the anti-vaxxers here in the United States have found an ally. Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
This past Wednesday, a group of Taliban opened fire in a market in Karachi and gunned down 7 people because they don't like polio vaccines.
Do they pay for HPV vaccines for youngsters in the United States?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
It depends.
Yeah, it depends on where you are, state to state.
They just extended it to males here in my province.
There are some parts of the country, Steve, where we call those slut shots.
Yeah.
meanwhile...
30 miles, by the way, Bob.
Oh, wow. So the reason the Taliban's gunning down people who want to get polio vaccines, you probably know why that is, right?
Killing?
No, thank you, CIA.
Huh?
See, the CIA infiltrated a vaccination program a few years back. And the Pakistanis
That's how they found Osama bin Laden, wasn't it?
I think that was part of it. And so they're concerned that every time someone tries to vaccinate little children to keep them from getting polio, that it's really the CIA spying on them.
Hmm.
It's one of those moments where you really wish there was a hell so that the CIA could collectively go to it.
I'm lost. I don't get it. Why would they...
Why would they what? Why would...
Taliban is shooting are shooting the vax or the people who are getting polio vaccinations?
The Taliban attacked the police in order to get the polio vaccine program to be suspended, which happened.
Because they want to kill, they want everyone to get polio.
No, because they think the CIA is spying on them through the vaccination program.
How? By injecting the polio vaccine and...
No, by sneaking CIA spies into Pakistan under the guise of being health workers.
They were taking the DNA of the bin Laden, people who were believed to be related to bin Laden, to try to confirm his identity, as I understand.
In the meantime, people are going to get polio.
Yes.
Oh, and let me repeat this. I've got a request from Scott in San Diego. And he says, I'm fairly new to the proceedings. Would you please repeat the process protocol for being part of the Friday on the Front Porch conversation? So you get on Skype, you create your Skype account. You've already got that down, Scott. You send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, and Sparky will then guide you through the process of joining the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And as an added bonus, I have a picture of Punky staring at his buddy in the mirror. Punky looks like a most perceptive cockatiel. So, I mean, it, nice to know. The anti-vaxxers have friends.
Jesus.
Can you guys hear me?
Gotcha, Rick.
Yeah.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Doing good, doing good. Your challenge has been met and exceeded.
Well, I better hop on the PayPal. You know, I feel so generous. How are you doing for the fundraising, Bob?
We are, let me see. Once we'll be a little over halfway to finishing off matching Harold's generosity after you.
And so where does that leave you for the week? Because I know you're trying to jam a lot of fundraising in this week.
We will actually be good.
Okay. Do you need another 50 from me?
We never turn it down because. You know, we have those weeks where, well, you know, like last Monday when we just laid a goose egg.
I was getting real nervous by
Wednesday.
I'm gonna add a red cashmere challenge to the purple rain challenge and offer to put 50 in if somebody matches it.
Okay, so there's another matching challenge of $50 on the table, courtesy of Billable Rick, whose previous was a. Previously it was a Purple Rain challenge. Now it's a Red Cashmere challenge.
Or I think it's Pink Cashmere is the name of the song.
Pink. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because the beret was raspberry.
Yeah, it's a raspberry beret, but I think it's Pink Cashmere. He named that after his girlfriend at the time, who he called Anna Fantastic, a beautiful lady from half Sicilian and half British, I think.
Okay. The Pink Cashmere Challenge is on.
There
the
you
table.
Go.
Yes.
Was that Thank the you, lady that lived in Toronto?
I don't know about that. He had a lot of different ladies, actually, over the years.
Well, he was married to a gal from Toronto, and he used to come and hang out here. They even had a mansion up in Rosedale, the ritzy part.
Oh, well. Yeah, he met her when he was touring in England when she was only 16 and he was probably like 28 or something like that, or 30, you know, one of those deals. So, you know, they had a pretty good romance for a while anyway. So,
well, 16, that's an improvement on Ted Nugent.
It's a lot better than Ted Nugent. I mean, at least he's not jailbait, you know. I see we've got a new listener here. Hey, Amanda.
It's Doug.
Huh?
Oh, Doug. Okay. Hey, Doug.
Oh, it's Doug. Oh, okay. All right. Hey, Doug. Cool. You know, Bob, you were talking about, you know, Ted Cruz's recent ad, basically getting upset about the Trump's apparent opposition to the potty bill, although you can't really tell with Trump.
Well, no. Cruz is upset about the fact that Trump isn't angry enough about the potty bills.
Okay. Well, I think Cruz would have been more effective if he would have called those people shape-shifting super predators who switch from female to male, or no, I guess male to female.
And male to male, they're not so much worried about the females to males. And maybe he could have said they have to be brought to heel.
There you go, exactly.
Hey, all, I think you can hear me now. I've unmuted it. This is Doug.
Yeah, Doug, you're okay. Golden.
Hello, Doug.
Hi. Glad to be on the front porch here.
Oh, glad to have you. Welcome to the free for all, the Merry Madcap, zany, real time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Hey, if this isn't fun, I don't know what is. Okay.
Well,
can you guys hear it raining?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Are you in the man cave getting pelted on the roof?
Yes. I'll mute.
So what's going on in sunny North Florida, Doug?
Oh, not too much. I had a real interesting conversation with some choice family members of mine on Facebook just earlier about this, all these fun bathroom ordinances, you know. My sister, you know, she found one of those posts going around on Facebook asking for people to boycott Target. Because, you know, Target's trying to affirm the transgender community by saying that they're very welcome to come in and use the facilities of their choosing. And so I had to sit down, I had to break it down for my mother and my sister. You know what I mean? Exactly to what extent that they were incorrect.
Oh, that's always fun. That's like a warm-up for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I was really polite, you know, the way I do this kind of stuff. I don't like confrontations, but you know, believe it or not, at the end of it, my mother, you know, came around and agreed with me. Who knows how long that'll last. But at the end of it, she's like, oh, well, thank goodness for you. You know, we're all learning something. And I'm like, I really hope you learn something, because y'all are the only people standing in unison stopping, you know, a whole group of people in our society from being treated properly. Anywho, that's what I've been sitting on lately. That whole subject.
Well, it's all. Okay, so. Doug, I think you're going to have to mute. Or yeah, later on if you want to, and you know, so just mute when you're unmute when you're talking and mute when you aren't.
Okay, I'm back.
Oh, good.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I had to put you guys on mute because I was in the store looking for Mother's Day cards and stuff for my charge, Will, to send off to his grandmother's. Yeah.
Oh, I was kind of hoping maybe there had been a rapprochement based on what you were saying earlier this week.
Oh, no. No, everything is, you know, everything is everything. I'm still just trying to, you know, deal with being me. And it was so funny. I was getting ready, speaking of mothers, I was getting ready to go on my, you know, my perilous journey to behind the orange curtain. And I checked my phone and I had a missed call. And it was from my mother. I told you, I said, my mother called. She's like, what? She's like, did she leave a message? I'm like, yeah. And so I checked the message, and the message says, I did not mean to call, but it wasn't in the mean way, but I didn't want to hang up. I wanted to follow through, and I was hoping that maybe you would answer the phone.
Hey, there's a little bit of guilt going on there.
Mm-hmm. Just a smidgen. You know, so that was that. But yeah, so it's just been an interesting kind of week. Oh, so I finally got my, as the Horn family, some of you guys are aware, I'm going to have surgery on my legs because, you know, I just can't have regular veins in my legs. No, I have to, my veins have to be three times, not only three times the normal size, but also I have extra veins.
Are they shape? But are they shape shifting chameleon veins, Tracy?
No, I wish they were. Because they are shape shifting because my legs have gone from, you know, kind of shapely and sexy to from that to Fred Flintstone legs to now the Hobbit by the feet.
No, you are so, not growing hair on your feet.
Well, I'm talking about the size, Bob. I'm talking about the size and the shape. No, there's no hair. The sans the hair, yes. Let me qualify that. Let me be very abundantly clear. I do not have hair growing.
Doesn't that happen if you excessively masturbate? That's what I've heard.
Growing hair from the palms of your hands.
That's your palms.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, unless you can do yeah. that with the soles of your feet, Rick. And if you can, I really don't want to know about it.
There's just certain things that I would like not to ever know about certain members.
Happy to go to your long home a long, long time from now, absent that knowledge.
Oh, and speaking of, since we're going to do Prince themed challenges, of course we have to do a lady cab driver challenge. Hello. Please, people realize there is a Prince song called Lady Cab Driver, right?
Yes.
Okay. Because I heard crickets, and I'm like, wait, no, seriously. That's why my handle is Lady Cab Driver, because of that song, for those of you who don't know. So
it's crickets in his house. That's all that is.
So in addition to the $50 challenge that I did yesterday that I haven't sent, let's do a Lady Cab Driver challenge for $25 today.
Okay, so that means that there is a grand total of $75 in challenges on the table, and 59 minutes to do that in.
Indeed. So yes, I've been listening to you, because I was, stuck on the freeway. And I thank God for Fridays on the front porch and this Friday's, you guys in general, because I have you on, the TuneIn app. And so when I'm stuck in traffic on these long rides, I'm like, oh God, thank God I can listen to Bob. But here out here in LA, we have a radio station, KJLH, who has been playing nonstop Prince music since they announced his passing and will continue through the entire weekend.
Cool. What is their what's their frequency, Tracy?
102.3. And if you live in white neighborhoods like I do and you do Billable, they have an app.
Okay, well, I don't care. I'll just crank the thing to 50 if I have to. I love Prince.
Well, no, what I'm saying is if you live in an area where that station is very... Because when I first moved out to the Valley, you couldn't... Once you got heading south, north on the 405, once you got to the 101... You did KJLH stop. You did not hear KJLH. And then over the last 20 or so years, they've gotten a stronger signal. I think once Stevie, because, oh, by the way, Stevie Wonder owns that radio station. There's a little trivia there.
Hell cool.
And once he bought the station, once he bought the station, I think they got, I don't know how it works in radio land on, towers or whatever they do. So once he bought the station, it went further out, so I could actually listen to KJLH in Sherman Oaks. You can pretty much get it almost into the West Valley in some spots.
Can you get it north in LA, like in the foothills, Tracy? Pasadena, North LA?
You might, but that's why I was saying that they do have an app. Okay. And that's what I was listening to it when
KJLH.
I have it. Okay. KJLH, and they do have an app. So and also you can listen to it online.
Okay. Well, as I'm heading to Pasadena to meet my date, we're going to drive down to the Pantages tonight to watch, I'm sure Prince would be proud, a metrosexual play called Kinky Boots.
Kinky Boots. Yes. I saw it on opening night. Have you seen it, Rick?
I've never seen it. She says it's great.
You are going to love it. You are going to absolutely, positively love it.
And I'm expecting that at the end of the show, they're probably going to break into singing Purple Rain, so I have my purple shirt.
I'm pretty sure they are.
You know?
I'm pretty sure they are. Well, you saw, I think, did I post it on the Horn page, how they broke in, they did it at the end of The Curl of Purple last night, and also at the end of Hamilton.
Yes, they did.
Yes, she did.
Was the Color Purple in L.A.? Because they showed a bunch of people singing that in L.A. too.
No, the Color Purple. Jennifer Hudson, by the way, is in the Color Purple in the New York production now.
Okay.
She's playing Suge. Speaking of, your show is ugly. She's playing Suge Avery, and so she sang Purple Rain, backed up by the entire cast of the Color Purple. And I posted on my Facebook page that I thought, because I watched that last night in the middle of the night. I woke up to it. It was because, and I posted on my Facebook page at that moment. I thought I was done crying until I heard Jennifer Hudson sing "Purple Rain."
Oh, yeah.
Because
I mean,
she's Jennifer Hudson, and now that's all I got to say. She,
yeah.
Oh my God, it was just the most amazing. And the outpouring of love. And just straight up adoration. People are, you know, are just like, people are still in shock. I know I'm still shocked. I'm still hurting. I am still, I'm now actually understanding the seven stages of grief, you know, because I've grieved, but I've never really, you know, I can't let it go, but it's still raw and it's still fresh.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all it takes is a song that comes on and I start to kind of tear up. I mean, I'm usually not like the crybaby type, but for some reason, this has really hit me. I mean, I can't say I've listened to Prince a lot lately. I mean, I like him. I've never went to one of his concerts, unfortunately. But, I mean, the guy was just uniquely talented and just an overall great human being. And, you know,
my very first concert. My very first concert, Rick.
Was it?
Purple Rain. Very first concert, Purple Rain. 1984 at the Cow Palace in San Francisco.
Oh boy, I bet that was great.
So we had, this is who was on the bill, my dear. We had, of course, Prince. We had Sheila E. We had Morris Day at the Time, and we had Apollonia 6.
Wow.
So I've seen Prince in concert like 20 times.
Wow, he played in L.A. I think at the Great Western Forum, like 21 nights in a row, like 3 years ago.
Yeah, it was called, and yes, I was there for four of those nights. Mm-hmm. So it's called, for you guys, this is the kind of man Prince was, because he knows that a lot of his fans cannot afford, you know, astronomical amounts of money that they charge for concert tickets. Do you know he only charged $25?
Are you serious? For those shows?
For all those shows, there were, of course, more expensive tickets if you wanted to sit on the floor.
Well, yeah.
But $25.
$25.
It cost me more. It cost me freaking more to park.
Yeah.
Than it cost me to go to the concert.
Wow. Well, you know, and the thing is, you know, he did so much of his own work that he didn't have a middleman to like siphon off half of that or whatever it is that he'd normally have to charge too.
Nope. And all these pissy ass like Taylor Swift and all these who you know have all these rights now for their music, they have Prince to thank for that. Because
I know
of how
they do.
He went, they have because of how he went toe to toe with Warner Brothers and said, "This is me. This is my music, and this is not how I want my music done."
Right. He basically asserted his right. That's why he changed in 99. He was protesting, you know, his treatment by Warner Brothers. So he stopped because they copyrighted his name. And so he started using that symbol instead of his name. And that's why he started calling himself the artist formerly known as Prince.
Formerly known as Prince.
So people knew what the hell that symbol meant.
It's like Fangu.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know what? And I guess, you know, they also talked about his humanity. You know, he sent money, you know, of course, Katrina. He sent money to Trayvon Martin's family. I mean, he's done so much.
Well, he's the kind of stuff, and he didn't want to get acknowledgement. He kind of did it all behind the scenes, you know?
Yeah, he did a lot of stuff under the radar.
Well, he's sort of like a true Christian who, like, prays in the closet and doesn't announce it all to the world, you know? That kind of thing?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right?
Exactly.
I heard on Chicken Noodle News that it's possible that he has, like, a vault. He has a vault of his unreleased recordings.
Yeah,
it's like 70% of the stuff he's produced hasn't even been released.
They said that he has enough music that hasn't even been released that it could probably go on for years.
Yeah,
without repeating that. And so, you know, my question is, now once all the dust settles, you know, there's going to be the legal battle.
Yeah.
As to but see, Prince was so meticulous in everything that he did. I can't imagine that he didn't have a will.
Oh, I'm sure he did. Yeah. I mean, I know he had a son, and the son died. I don't know if he's got. I don't think he has any heirs, does he?
No. Well, I mean, other than surviving family members, but I don't know. That's when you come in, Rick. I don't know who has the right to survivorship and all that.
Well, you know, if he has a will, the will will determine who gets what, assuming that you don't have people coming in with fraudulently procured wills that, you know, claim, oh, you know, I met, you know, Harold Hughes on the freeway in, you know, middle of Nevada, and he gave me this, he made me beneficiary of his estate, like one of those deals, you know?
But you know, Prince was stranded on the street one day, and I gave him a cup of water, or I fixed a flat tire or whatnot and so forth, so...
For who?
So who's? No, that's what I'm going. I'm waiting for those stories to come up.
Right.
You know what I'm really not really waiting for, because Bob, didn't you talk about they were already talking about he died of an overdose?
Oh, that was what Joe Arpaio said.
That's bullshit. Oh. I mean, I think this is what happened. He had health problems already. He, the worst thing that might have happened is I know he suffered like pain from all his. You know, he wore those high platform shoes and he'd jump off the stage and land awkwardly. And he had like pain in his hips and his knee and back probably. So, I mean, it's possible he could have had oxy that he was taking, but I doubt that.
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is because of the circumstances of his death, there will be a full autopsy.
There has already been done.
Well, no, it's being done.
Well, that's true, but the actual cutting and extraction has been done.
But, that's a matter of state law.
Right.
So, the answers will be forthcoming. But, yeah, Joe Arpaio said drug overdose. Someone I don't know, the speculation is that it was HIV related. And then there's Aretha Franklin saying the Zika got him.
Right. But
Aretha saying it's Zika?
Yeah.
No. Nah. I think that's what happened. The guy was a workaholic. He didn't get enough sleep. He worked too hard, got dehydrated. You know, maybe he had renal failure or something like that. And then he died of renal failure. That's possible.
But then again, remember, we're talking about, and remember, didn't we talk about this yesterday, Bob, about the fact that he is a J-Dub, and if he did get sick and it was something that was treatable, he might have refused treatment to a certain extent because of his religious beliefs.
Well, especially if it involved preparations made from human blood.
Yeah. Now, is that against their religion to take things like oxy and stuff like that if they have legitimate pain? Do they reject all modern medicine?
No, they don't reject. No, I have friends that are J-Dubs. They don't reject all modern medicine, no. But okay. I know definitely... I had a friend who, when she was pregnant with her son, I was terrified because she had, RH. She's a RH negative with her blood or whatever. And okay. I was absolutely positively terrified because it was kind of a high risk pregnancy that if something went wrong and she needed a blood transfusion, she would have refused it.
Hmm.
Fortunately, it didn't come to that. The birth went without a hitch and stuff like that. There was, you know, she was not in need of a blood transfusion, but that's the kind of stuff that would terrify, because it's like, really,
Yeah.
Like you said, Bob, these are people who will let their children die.
Yeah.
Rather than let them have a bloodthirsty future.
Tracy, was Michael Jackson a Seventh-day Adventist, or was he a J-Dub?
He was a J-Dub as well.
Yeah.
He was.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So let's ponder this for a minute. And I've told this story before, but some Jehovah's Witnesses became real fond of Agnes because everybody loves Agnes. And so every time they went out witnessing, they came here because Agnes wouldn't just run them off the porch with a shotgun. Instead, she'd stand there and talk to them, be polite, and until she just got fed up, and it got to where that she would go and hide. She would go and shut the door, and we said hide in the bathroom, while one of us opened the door and said, no, she's not here today. Oh, okay, we'll tell her. You know, they didn't want to witness to us. Just tell her we stopped by. And we used to refer to that as Agnes going into the witness protection program. But and so everybody slams the door in the face of the witnesses. But tell me you wouldn't take that copy of Watchtower if Prince was standing on your front stoop.
Of course.
Or Michael Jackson.
Especially if you started singing Purple Rain Let's Go Crazy or something like that, you know?
Well, it was so funny because, like I said, I've gone to several Prince concerts. I went to concerts pre-J-Dub and, you know, post-J-Dub. And
as a matter of fact,
No, he was at Seventh-day Adventist. I don't know if he was raised Seventh-day Adventist, but he went from Seventh-day Adventist and converted to J-Dub.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah.
I'll never forget the first concert that I went to after he converted was like 2000. I think it was like early 2000, maybe 2001, 2002. I really don't remember when he converted. And so we're all in the audience waiting to see how he deemed himself as high, I'm sexy, celibate, and single.
Oh.
that's what he was. Oh my God, with the damn trains.
I thought somebody was warming up on their trombone.
No, it was a Metrolink train getting ready to stop at Anaheim Station for the Angels. You know, of course they have their own train station at Anaheim at the Angel Stadium. But anyway, we were all waiting to see, you know, what music he would perform now that he was a Jehovah's Witness. I mean, because this is the man that, you know, most of his lyrics and the titles to his songs, you could not say on morning radio, like, you know, Head, yeah. or Darling Nikki, you know, Darling Nikki. In the hotel lobby, Darling Nikki, masturbating with a magazine. I mean, you know, but he's still pretty much saying his entire, catalog without, you know, a certain songs. He didn't sing Naughty Nikki. He didn't sing, you know, Head and stuff like that. But
well, let's remember it was Darling Nikki that helped inspire Tipper Gore to found the My Jesus Parents Music Resource Council. We must have some sticky little labels on all of these Rocky Roll albums.
Yeah, bitch, whatever, Tipper.
By the way, update. Thanks very kindly to our buddy Gary, Laborman. He has met both Billable Ricks and your challenge, Tracy. And nice. He says, this may help to beat the Swede. Happy birthday, Agnes. The Grand 50. Oh. So
cool.
Yeah, so that has been done. And then Tim followed up and said, I got a $50 challenge on the table for Bernie, for Prince, and yes, for Rush, the band people, not that Rush fans.
Yeah,
so there is yet again another $50 challenge on the table.
Awesome.
The band, right, people.
Community here, Rob. The I band. Tell you, lots of generous folks, you know?
Yeah. Oh, and I got a note. I got a note from Jay Cruz in here. I mentioned Andrew Jackson being the first person to advocate the direct election of the president and getting rid of the Electoral College, which is probably the single most anti-democratic institution in our political process. And Jay Cruzen says, I really don't want to be a stick in the mud and never really liked the Electoral College, but I have to disagree. The problem with direct election of the president is that candidates would only have to campaign in the major cities of our country. Basically, up and down the East Coast and California could decide the election. Bob, you'd never see another presidential candidate in West Virginia again. It's not like we see them very often anyway. I mean, I'm kind of gratified, frankly, that nobody's actually coming here and pretending to give a good goddamn about West Virginia or Appalachia. You know, it's just, you know, back to status quo. And, you know, that's all right. Because, you know, it's Appalachia. Forget about it, Jake. But Jay Cruzen continues, with the lack of needing your vote also comes the lack of a need to represent you. I guess you could say, fuck it, all the rural and sparsely populated areas go for Republicans anyway, right? I'm not arguing one way or the other, Jay Cruzen says. If you can figure out a better way to elect a president, I'm sure millions of Americans would love to hear it, including me. And my only observation there is that up and down the East and West Coast already pretty much determines the presidency, at least as far as Democrats are concerned. You get the East and West Coast, you pick up Florida, you know, you do some Colorado, Minnesota, Iowa, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, and you're done. And that's, you know, that's why that map going back to the early aughts, it shows like the coasts and the strip across the northern U.S. and the rest of it's labeled Jesus Land in blood red.
Oh, jeez.
And I might also add, along the way, and you know, I'm not poking holes in Jay Cruzen's objection, but as of the election of 2000, well,
join the front porch, Brian? No, okay.
As of the election of 2000, well, it
breathe, Bob, breathe. Breathe.
And it's happened before that the person who got the most votes didn't become the president of the United States.
Yeah, so, after the 2000 election, I seriously took to my bed. I was like, what the hell? And then I'm like, okay, we got another chance in 2004. And then we elected the motherfucker again. And I'm like, wait, what? Were you guys not here?
Those two elections,
Tracy, proved that the most powerful position in a statewide office is Secretary of State, because first Harris screwed people in Florida, and then it was Ken Blackwell in Ohio.
Exactly.
And what was that What was that British tabloid that had the headline, "How can 50 million people be this stupid?"
Yeah.
Which reminds me of something that I've been saying for years now, and you know, I think. From the clip earlier that Sparky shared with us, you know, hi, Joe Biden. Hi, glad you're listening. And to Bill Maher, hi, Bill. Glad you're listening, too, buddy. For something that I've also been saying for years, in that the presidential election is not simply a plebiscite. It is a national IQ test we take every 4 years. We actually managed to pass that test the last two presidential elections. This primary season and the coming general election presents a distinct likelihood that we're on the way to flunking.
Oh, wow. I'm reading something, I guess, Connie posted on our the Facebook about the governor of Virginia is reinstating and restoring to over 200,000 felons the rights to vote.
Good.
Are you sure this is Virginia?
And the Republicans are having a hissy fit over it.
Well, see, and
You're talking about Terry McCall?
Well, you know, I've been listening to, speaking of fuck 'em, I mean, I'm listening more and more to, when I have, now that I have a little bit of free time, and when I don't have Will, I've been using my Audible, and I downloaded the new Jim Crow. Ah. And one of the things that Michelle Alexander talks about is the fact that the new Jim Crow is how they have just, they're using the legal system to legally disenfranchise Black people, especially yep. Black men, and an ever increasing number of Black women. Because once you're a felon, you no longer have legally have a right to vote. You no longer legally have a chance at an education. I mean, a funded education by the government, food stamps, housing, or anything that's government related.
Yeah. Think about how recently we just realized how important banning the box is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But for so long, we've been having people get in trouble with the law, and then it's basically like, all right, your life's over because you're just going to be in a cycle of disenfranchisement for as long as it lasts.
Well, fortunately, and yet another reason why I will never leave California, because even though I have a felony in the state of California, I can still vote.
Yeah.
There you go.
I can't
serve on a jury, but I don't care about that.
Meanwhile, here in Appalachistan, however, I can happily report to you that while upon conviction for a felony in the state of West Virginia, one loses one's right to vote and one's right to keep and bear arms, that it is a reasonably simple process upon the completion of one's term of incarceration and the payment of one's debt to society to have restored unto you one's right to keep and bear arms.
But not to vote.
Voting is a little bit more difficult.
Hey, Tracy.
Let me make, because you were going in and out, Bob. I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. So a motherfucker, an ex-felon or a felon that has completed paid his debt to society, is eligible to bear arms or carry his freedom protector, but he will still not be able to cast his vote during an election time. Is that what you're telling me, Bob?
I'm telling you precisely that, Ms. Tracy.
Because they can extract revenue from a person who can bear arms. Mm-hmm. That's the exact reason why. You can't extract revenue from a voter, really.
Well,
you can extract a heck of a lot of revenue from someone who loves purchasing weapons.
Well, Doug, that, but also Wolverines!
Tracy, I was going to say,
yes.
do you realize that the single demographic group in the country that votes in the highest percentage... What you know what that is?
No.
Black women. That's probably Republicans are trying to disenfranchise them.
Yes. You know? Because, see, and let's face it, because of the war on Black people, I mean, if you want to talk about a war on people, it's not a class, it's not a war on the rich, it's not a war on, it's a war on Black people.
Yeah.
And considering that you have incarcerated a very large number of Black men, who's left? Black women. Right. So we have so of course we're going to be out there voting. We're going to be out there trying to change the world. And it's like, wait a second, hold up now. We can't have these women causing too much of a ruckus. So we're going to have to figure out ways to criminalize them as well. So, you won't get me on a drug state because I don't do drugs, but you will criminalize the fact that you give me a felony because why? I don't know. I was working while on AFDC, the county welfare, whatever the fuck it's called now. But I was working, but I reported my income. However, the county, for whatever the reason, didn't count that income. I sent in my paperwork, I did everything I was supposed to do. They sent me a check. So how am I, if you send me a check, riddle me this, Batman, if you send me a check after I've sent you the proof, sent you showing that I worked X amount of days or what have you, and you send me a check, how am I supposed to know that I'm getting too much money?
Well,
How $500 a month is too much money, I'll never know. But there you go.
Because if you make it, if you've got any more than that, the welfare is going to become a welfare hammock, and you're going to become dependent on the government.
And a deadbeat. Don't forget deadbeat, Bob. Don't forget deadbeat.
Moocher.
Tracy just spoke so much truth, it's blowing my mind. You know, first about the fact that black women as a whole, you know, the women in families are such like the cornerstone of the family. You know, they keep everything up even when everything's falling down around them. So you look at a community that's been disenfranchised, look at the black woman and how amazing black women are in our society and how we take so many of them for granted, but even specifically like you're speaking to with your specific experience, right, with using the welfare system in some way. Look at how much we've set up a bureaucracy and all these Republicans want to go out and prosecute people for the smallest thing. For the $500 that they lost because of their bookkeeping and their administrative figures, they have cost more income loss to you, I'm sure, and more income
to the
economy. How much more did they have to pay out in some other way? I don't know.
Let me tell you Let me just tell you what was happening with me when happened. I hadn't been on welfare for 5 years. I was working. I had just become a full-time employee at a Department of Defense company, and they were on the leading edge of biometric technology. As a matter of fact, the more I think about it, they're probably the ones that developed the touchpad for your iPhone, so you can use your finger to open up your iPhone instead of a password. I'm pretty sure that was my old company. But so I, you know, at 1999, no, before that, whatever, 1999 is when I was making $40,000. Did you hear what I'm saying? $40,000 a year in 1999. My rent at the time was only $800 a month.
Wow.
Okay. I had a car note with insurance of $200 a month. Okay. So once I got the fiction, I was also a tax preparer for like 2 or 3 years, tax seasons for H&R Block. So that was another $10,000 because during tax season, I would make anywhere between $5,000 and $10,000 for the entire tax season. So that was, so basically that's $50,000 that I lost, okay?
If they had any brains where they've got shit in their heads, they would realize that prosecuting people for the smallest welfare things, you know what it does? It steals money from the greater economy. You not making that amount of money and you not being able to support your family in a brilliant way costs greater society when it happens collectively among people. So they basically got 5 cents in their hands to lose, you know, hundreds of dollars later. It's really on a grander scale.
But Doug,
yes, sir.
You have to understand there's a cost benefit analysis involved. Everything you just said is 100% sterling true.
Yeah, well, I know.
but if your ulterior motive is to destroy the idea of a social safety net and a social welfare system,
yes, sir.
And if your goal is to keep people from accessing that system, then that's how you wind up with statutes like what Tracy was dealing with. I'm reminded of the fact that the commissioner or whatever government functionary in the state of Georgia, Stan, just a little north of you, became famous for the fact that she would go to her caseworkers' desks. She would put zero candy bars. You remember the Zero?
Mm-hmm.
It's like white chocolate with a chocolate nougat in it.
Wait, it's a what? Candy bars? What?
Yeah, she would put zero candy bars. The name of the candy bar is a Zero. And she would put zero candy bars on the desks of all the welfare caseworkers to remind them that they were to provide zero welfare benefits.
Hey, Bob, I mean, yeah, fuck her.
It's the problem of not understanding what externalities are, right? Which is the greater effect on the community that it impacts. When you don't understand the extent of impact, I mean, sorry, I'll let other people.
Well, I have to
that's
tell you,
too much rationality,
folks,
though.
You know,
we're speaking rational.
If you're on SSI and SSDI, which I am, and I also get IHSS for my caregiver, as people know in California, if I try to go out and get a job, they take my benefits away, and it's harder for me to get, you know, and I end up, you know, a lot worse situation by going out and working than I do by accepting whatever they're willing to give me as far as a, you know, as far as my benefits are concerned. And if I try to fight, try to get more benefits for myself, they sit there and they say, well, you know, we don't have the money in the budget. Well, they don't have the money in the budget because they're not taxing people who can afford to pay for the benefits. Those are the people that have the excess money in the state. They don't want to tax people. They don't want to tax the corporations with the excess money in the state because they don't want to scare corporations and wealthy people from leaving the, you know, into leaving to another state where they're going to have to compete for, you know, for keeping that business in the state. So I just said something very simply, or said something in a very convoluted fashion that could probably be said very simply. But you get
no,
the
you
point.
Said it. I mean,
no, you said it very well.
You said it very clearly, Larry. Here's the irony of the whole thing. Now, remember, I said I hadn't been on AFDC or whatever in 5 years when the conviction happened. So I still don't even know how it happened, I don't know what happened. But here's the irony. Because now I'm a convicted felon, I can't get bonded as a tax preparer. I can't work in a Department of Defense contractor anymore because of felony. So what happened? And to the state of California at the time, the first thing they ask you on a job application is, have you been convicted of a felony within the last 5, 6, 7 years? So that means I can't get a job. So guess what I had to do, y'all? I had to go back on AFDC.
It's ignorant. It's an ignorant system. You know, if you committed a felony, if an individual committed a felony, right, and they served their time, and they got out, and none of those rules existed, and they thrived, you know what they would do? They would not put themselves in that kind of a position. Right? Isn't it always said people who make mistakes learn best about? But what happens is they create a system that disallows you from having any other option other than the most meager of options.
But
and
remember,
what does that
but
do?
Remember, Doug. And yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think this is worth noting. we're talking. Did you say we're talking about 1999, Tracy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's remember. 1999 mm-hmm. was that time period when the Clintons were busy bringing the super predators to heel.
Yeah.
And creating the prison industrial complex. So yeah. If you can pop somebody for a first-time felony for welfare fraud and you destroy their ability to participate in the economy, then you can mm-hmm. throw them back onto welfare again. And then hopefully mm-hmm. you can pop them for a second time. And then if they ever get caught stealing a Snickers while black, you can put them in prison to the benefit of the corporate prison industrial complex for the rest of their natural lives and see shareholders profit.
Hey, Bob.
Exactly.
You're out, baby.
Yes, Scott.
I've been listening patiently. And all of the points that are raised have been good ones, but it still doesn't quite get to the bottom line. And yeah, Punk.
Yeah,
and
tell
this
him,
came to me like in a dream almost several years ago. And here's how I sum it up. Human suffering is neither noble or inevitable. It exists because we permit it to happen. Often, religious and political forces encourage it.
as it serves to help further their ends, interests, and purposes.
Right, because you got to suffer like Jesus did.
Well, yeah. I mean, the politicians and the governments, state governments and even federal governments, have been manipulated, and some have gone willingly with a smile on their face and a song in their heart to make it seem as if there's something noble about people suffering. And that's just nonsense.
The entire idea of punishment. Go ahead.
There ain't shit noble about suffering, motherfuckers. I'm sorry. I mean, I'm not going to, you know. when you have gone from making $50,000 a year and have never even thought about going to jail and really don't know how to hustle, to have to learn how to hustle to the point where you're going on dates with old, ugly, fat white men just so you can take a doggy bag home to your child to eat. Now, that's suffering.
Yes, it is.
Okay. And it's entirely created out of thin air.
Absolutely, Doug. And let's remember this. Artificial scarcity is one of the most important tools of the 1%. If it wasn't,
well,
I mean, consider the wealth. Consider the awe-inspiring, mind-bending wealth of Harvard and Yale, okay?
Or USC out here.
Or USC or Stanford, okay?
Or Pepperdine.
Sure. And so they've got this just tremendous wealth. They have the power to expand their facilities to offer the best education in the world to a tremendously higher number of applicants and students. But if there's a possibility that that's going to increase the number of poor people getting access to knowledge, knowledge is power, and the next thing you know, you got a bunch of poor people running around with power, and they might upset the great big golden apple cart.
Well, and you raise an interesting concept in terms of artificial, what is the term that you used? Artificial
scarcity.
Scarcity. I heard, oh God, at least 20 years ago, at that time, the statistic apparently was there are enough renewable resources available worldwide. If they were converted into dollars, they could make each man, woman, and child on the planet the equivalent of a millionaire. So the notion that scarcity runs rampant in the world is just nonsense. It's the allocation of the resources.
Yes, sir.
And the system that keeps it the way it is, because we don't want no people rocking no boats.
We'd be square right now if we matched up allocating and the mechanisms of taking care of business with what we actually understand about the world as it stands already. Right? We're just getting sharper and sharper about how we understand, you know, science. It doesn't matter what the discipline is, right? Any of these sociological studies that they do, right, about the incidence of transgenderism or the LGBT community, we understand enough of impact that if we did anything with respect to the economy or, you know, our civil rights, we could fix everything tomorrow or the next. We could fix everything starting 50 years from now. It's only that we keep getting things very, very wrong over and over again.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have much more time to get stuff wrong. We got to,
nope.
I had a meeting
Tracy,
yesterday.
We are out of time for getting stuff
just
wrong.
Right.
We are out. I had a meeting yesterday. We have a new, you know, I've mentioned a couple of times on the show that we're having issues at my church. We're going through some transitional changes, blah, blah, blah. And I'm on the board of directors. And yesterday, as I was, you know, signing off talking to you guys, I was on my way to a meeting. We have a new interim pastor. How we work at my denomination, which is totally new to me because I grew up in a Baptist church and there was no, you know, nominating committee or anything like that. We had a pastor that was there until he died. And then he named his, if he didn't have a son who was a minister as well, he named his successor. But through our denomination, we, you know, when our pastor leaves, we have first we have a gap pastor, and then the gap pastor stays until the interim, and then the interim stays until we go through the process of finding and nominating a senior pastor. So
we've been going through hell. And one of the things, I had to meet with our interim pastor. We finally got an interim pastor after over a year. And one of the things I said, I called it, you would have been proud of me, Bob, because I made up a word, because we were talking about, what is it, you know,
incrementalism.
Increment. Thank you. And I said, it's just a church, and, you know, we do need to do things a little bit slowly. But I said, radicalize incrementalism.
Yeah. That makes sense. That's radical fundamentalism.
Right. And my pastor looked at me.
Or liberal fundamentalism.
Right. He looked at me, and he's like, I said, I know I just made up words. He's like, you did, but it makes sense. I said, because there's always going to be that group of people that are going to be stuck in the I call it La Brea tar pits. I call it La Brea tar pits religion or thought process. And I told him, I said, there's always going to be those people that are going to be stuck in that tar pit who kind of want to change. They're trying to pull themselves out, but they really don't want to try that hard. They're going to become the mastodons and become fossil
fuels. Saber-tooths.
And then there's the people like me who are ready for a change, who are hungry and thirsty for a change. And we want change now. And so we need to focus on those people that want to change. We're not going to leave the people, we're going to keep a rope out in the tar pits for those who, and we're going to pull them out as needed when they really want to get pulled out. But for the time being, we're just going to leave their asses in the tar pit.
Well, you know, a long time ago, and I need to shift gears here.
I love your imagery.
I need to shift gears here just for a minute, but a long time ago.
Bob, I wanted to say I'm going to head out here. I wanted to thank everybody, and I'll jump on PayPal when I get back from the show.
Okay,
enjoy
it.
Enjoy
it, Rick. Thank you so much for making the challenge.
Bye, Rick.
Where's Rick off to the show?
Rick's off to the show. There's a couple of things. One, what appears to be the last challenge of the evening remains on the table, and that's a $50 challenge courtesy of Tim that I don't want Tim to make and see unresponded to. So that's out there. 13 minutes to go before the end of the program. Secondly, Doug, I'm going to ask you a quick question because I need some Florida geography help here.
Okay, yeah, I'll try to help you. Let me see.
Where is Seminole County?
Seminole County is in Orlando.
Okay.
I lived in Seminole County. I'm all about Seminole County.
I'm awfully glad that you and your lovely little family aren't there.
Yeah, we were very not too long ago. But right, no, I mean, talk about... You know, we got the killer of Trayvon Martin, and right across the street, I don't know if she was in Seminole too, but Casey Anthony, right?
I got one more to add.
Okay.
Oh, Jesus.
And I hate to be a downer and a bum out at the end of the program, but when things like this happen, I think at the very least, we talk about a lot of things. We talk about politics. We talk about culture. We play around. We have our fun. But as the widow of Willie Loman says at the end of Death of a Salesman, attention must be paid. And this is one of those.
Vigilant.
And I warn you,
Wait, let him finish.
I warn you, it's sickening. This is the story of Sharisha Brown and her two children, Henry IV and Aaliyah. It's also the story of her ex-husband, Henry Brown. On April the... Well, late this past Sunday, Henry Brown laid in wait for Sharisha Brown, and he jumped out of hiding And he stabbed Sharisha Brown to death as she was walking out of a Chili's restaurant. And then he shot and killed little Henry IV and Aaliyah. Then he tried to run over an off-duty paramedic who tried to come to their rescue. So that little family is dead. He had easy access to guns, even though on December the 19th, 2015, Sharisha Brown called in a domestic violence report on Henry Brown. He said she had pulled her hair. She said he had pulled her hair, dragged her into a closet, and begun beating her in the head. They were having marital difficulties, and he said that if she tried to take the kids, he would kill her. Police investigated. Police determined that Henry Ramon Brown III did not pose a substantial, credible threat against Sharisha Brown and the two children. She begged, she pleaded, she was given custody of the children. But ultimately, after the CPS caseworker advised her to get an injunction against her husband and she pursued it, it was dismissed. And now she is dead. I offer this up with the reminder that the abuser was able to go on and later kill his victim and his own children and grievously wound a potential rescuer. But there is a woman who sat and is sitting in prison 4 years in Florida,
mm-hmm.
who merely fired a warning shot to make her abuser back the hell off.
Well, let's not forget.
The NRA death lottery, the roulette wheel of death maintained by the National Rifle Association, stopped this past Sunday in Seminole County, Florida. And the unwitting winners were a 4-year-old, a 3-year-old, and their mama, who paid with their lives for NRA policies that says we can't keep guns out of the hands of killers. Oh, but Bobby stabbed her to death. When knives are outlawed, only outlaws will have knives. Yeah, but he blew the children away. What do you want to bet? What do you want to bet that the people who made the determination that he was not a credible threat, what do you want to bet they're Republicans?
Of course they
all have the money in the world.
What about the Violence Against Women Act? That didn't go through.
What?
The Violence Against Women's Act.
But they're women. We bleed. Yeah. We don't matter. Well, on a higher note, it's a sad note. Bittersweet, whatever. The sister in Connecticut, who same circumstances, crazy abusive ex-husband, threatened to kill the kids. He chased her out of the house. She got in her car and ran his ass over. But the impact, I think she ran him up against the garage door. She basically impaled him against the garage door with the front of her car. And the impact was so bad that she forgot what happened. She had, retrograde amnesia. And so, of course, she was found guilty of murder and all that. And then I don't know if they filed an appeal or what have you, because she was in jail. She was in jail under $1 million bond or something that she could not afford. They went back to trial and they found her not guilty.
But well, one little additional note on this particular case, if I may. When the police interviewed Henry Brown III, he said, "She's just mad at me because she found out I've been cheating on her for the last 5 years."
Oh, okay. So she was just being a hysterical, vindictive female.
Well, this is just a case of them selectively choosing his narrative instead of treating it objectively.
Sharisha Brown's brother, a man named Daniel Jim of Jacksonville, Florida, when interviewed by Child Protective Services, said, "I don't know anything about domestic violence in their home. I've never seen her or the kids with any injuries." But he also said,
"This is her own brother."
Yeah, but he also said, "You know, there's always been concerns."
Concern.
The CPS worker the CPS worker who investigated in the home reported back that the home is clean and free of any hazards to the young children.
Now, couldn't Nicole Brown Simpson say, couldn't they say the same about Nicole Brown Simpson?
Beautiful point.
Even if OJ did or did not kill her, he beat the shit out of her on a regular basis.
Right, but like in this case, you know, the previous record has no bearing. The condition of the house has no bearing. She made a claim, right, that alleged that he beat her, pulled her into a closet by her hair, threatened to kill, you know, so-and-so, the kids, if she were to leave with them, or kill them, rather, right? I don't care what this man can say. You cannot dismiss someone's account out of hand because you are swayed by someone's witness or his testimony.
Well, this is another reason why I'm glad I live in California. I had to file a restraining order against a boyfriend who, this is before Nicole and OJ. So back then, because after Nicole and OJ, because of the outcry of them never arresting him and taking him into custody, blah blah blah. Now they take everybody and sort everything out at the police station. Well, in my case, had an ex-boyfriend who before we got together, had no idea they had a drug issue. And it was so funny because he's a white guy and I didn't know at the time. He was hooked up. See, white people just take everything from black people. We can't even have crack. I know, I'm terrible. But anyway, he tried to steal money from me and I wouldn't.
And by the way, Doug, this took place in Altamont Springs, Florida. And it was their police department who determined there was no probable cause.
I think Disney's in Altamont.
Happiest place on earth.
Oh, yeah, you know it. But, I mean, it's pretty clear that whoever took down his side of the story and reported it to the judge or whomever obviously said, you know, hey, don't. This is clearly such and such, such and such. This thing happened, blah, 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 and then dismissed. So that's unfortunate.
Time to wrap it up.
Well, yes, it is. It is, because I've got to go and help out with Agnes and the grandbabies. And
good night, all.
Y'all have a wonderful evening. Malloy's a rerun. Otherwise, if I didn't have other stuff on hand, I would go long this evening, and we'd do an extended Friday on the front porch. I want to send out thanks before
I gotta go out in the house and warm up.
Getting a mite chilly, are you, Sparky?
Yeah.
The conversation, I presume, will continue. But I want to, before we leave, I want to thank our buddy Thomas, and I want to thank Darlene, both of whom responded to Tim's challenge, and thank you very kindly, both of you. Mm-hmm. Thomas sent a note and said, "Have a Tim from L.A. head-on ache aspirin." How about that? applied directly to the forehead. Are they still in business? I don't know. Thank you kindly, both Thomas and Darlene, for helping out. I can't tell you how important this is because there's going to be a wild flurry of bill paying before I get out the door tomorrow. So thank you all very kindly. Thank you to the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that is the Horn Friday on the Front Porch conversation. Thank you very kindly to, thank you very kindly to our dear friend at the, our dear friend Harold at the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Thank you to Billable Rick. Thank you, Tracy, the lady cab driver. Thank you, Laborman. Thank you, Tim, Thomas, Darlene. I want to make sure I get all of these because it is all ever so important to keeping this all going. Thank you, Louie, and thank you to Rico. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you to Leola. Thank you, one and all. Thank you to our subscriber, Michael. It is much appreciated, and it is how we keep independent conversation radio, progressive in nature, on the air. Have a wonderful weekend. Have a great week. I'm going to miss you guys like crazy. And we'll pick all of this up again on, let me see here. On Monday, May the 2nd, the day after Agnes and my, Cyphron and Gazetta's, the day after Agnes and my 23rd wedding anniversary. Thank you again. Have a wonderful weekend and a wonderful week. And Randy. Randy said, I didn't catch it. Did we beat the Swede? The Swede is thumped. We have beaten the Swede 4 months in a row. So that means, courtesy of our buddy Scott in Sweden, let's see. That means $80, an extra $80 on top of it all. Thank you very kindly, Scott. So that means in May, the Beat the Swede Challenge goes to 90. Adds up, doesn't it? Thanks, everybody. Have a good night and a great weekend and a wonderful week. Bye now.